The Heron's Cry by Anne Cleves, read by Jack Holden. Chapter 1. Jen had drunk too much. They were in Cynthia Pryor's garden, lounging on the grass, and it was just getting dark. The party had moved outside, become quieter and less frenetic. Jen could smell cut grass and honeysuckle, the scent intense, heady and oversweet. She found herself mesmerized by the rhythm of the flashing fairy lights that Cynthia had strung along the high brick wall and woven between the ivy and climbing roses. Cynthia's place was the kind of gaff to have a wall around it, a large, detached house looking out over Rock Park, only a few hundred yards from Jen's narrow, terraced home, but a million miles in terms of class. Jen was a Liverpudlian and carried the idea of class with her like a badge of honour. Her dad had been a docker, and her mother still stacked shelves in a supermarket. Although it was dark, the air remained hot and the fire in the pit was there for effect and to toast marshmallows, not because it was needed. They'd had an early heat wave. It was only the end of June, but already there were calls for water rationing, talk of standpipes if the weather didn't break soon. In North Devon, they weren't usually short of rain. Earlier, inside the house, there'd been loud music and, despite the warmth, dancing. Jen loved a good dance and could move like a demon. Her husband had disapproved, but she no longer had to care what he thought. Now they'd all drifted outside, and Wes, one of Cynthia's arty mates, was playing guitar, something moody and slow. Nobody could do moody like Wes. Jen had fancied him like crazy when she'd first met him, but then she fancied most of the single men she'd bumped into. She was a tad desperate. Wes was brooding, dark-haired and fit, the stuff of Jen's dreams. Later, she'd decided that a weed-smoking musician who lived with a bunch of hippies in the hills and supplemented his income by making weird furniture from driftwood wasn't the best fit for a woman with sole responsibility for two teenage kids, who was also a cop. Next to the wall, a table had been set up and covered with a cloth. The cloth was Cynthia all over and showed how classy she was. With the general exodus, Cynthia had brought out all the bottles and put them there, proving to the world that she was still organized and in control, though she must have had just as much to drink as Jen. Jen poured herself another glass of red and sat on the grass too. She told herself and everyone else within earshot that it had been years since she'd been to such a great party. Bloody years. Later, only a small group was left close to the fire. Jen found herself talking to a middle-aged man, one of Cynthia's neighbours. She'd seen him inside earlier, before they'd turned up the music, working the room, chatting politely to the other guests. He was small and sturdy, built like a troll from a fairy story, with a square head and short legs, and a wide smile that just prevented him from being ugly. Jen didn't fancy him in the slightest, but everyone else seemed to have paired off, and she hated that sense of being the only single person in the group. Since her divorce, the world seemed made up of happy couples. She even envied the ones who weren't so happy. This man wore a checked shirt and walker's trousers, lightweight, easily dried. Jen could imagine him a member of a rambler's club. She thought he might be an accountant or a lawyer. Cynthia was a magistrate, sitting in the lower court, passing judgment on the petty criminals, the misfits and saddos, whom Jen was trying to convict, and she knew lots of lawyers. She and Jen had first met in court. Despite their different roles, they'd always got on. Cynthia's husband was something important in the local hospital trust, and she didn't need a paid job. Now, Jen was at that stage where she knew she'd had enough to drink, but she couldn't quite stop. Her ex-husband had always said she had an addictive personality, the words spoken with a sneer and an edge of pity, just before giving her a good slap, and then blaming her for provoking him. She thought Nigel had been holding the same glass of dry white for most of the evening. "So, Nigel, what do you do for a living?" He'd already told her his name, slightly apologetically, as if it wasn't a name to be proud of. Nigel. Nigel Yeo. Yeo being a local name means he's obviously from the West Country. Nigel ages him, though. Who calls their kid Nigel these days? Now she smiled, her best flirty smile. He might be older than she usually liked